A distinctive newspaper column is our topic today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Martha Garcia's writings are both public and personal. We'll chat with her on this edition of Scribble.
Good to see you, Martha. Been reading your column, I think, ever since the day it first began. What was it, a couple years ago at least in the Argus?
It was 2015.
But your byline lists you as a communicator, so I'm assuming that's not the only writing you do or done. Why don't we start with the big picture? Who is Martha Garcia?
Wow. Well?
Well, 10 words.
10 words. No. Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm a mother, a wife, a daughter, and a survivor, a cancer survivor.
Right. And that's the column that you began writing.
Yep, that's what it initially began with.
But you're listed as a communicator. Do you teach writing elsewhere?
Yes,
or are you
involved
in writing?
I am in writing. I'm an adjunct professor. I've taught at a couple of the colleges locally. I teach speech communications, composition and business writing and English writing. So a little bit of everything.
What prompted you to take a personal issue like cancer, and write about it?
It was really interesting. I began meeting people, and it's not until you get struck by cancer, as we say, that it's a journey. It is indeed a journey. And, you know, you don't know where this journey will take you. I just knew that the time that I spoke to my editor, I had done special projects, written special projects for the Dispatch Argus. And I'd spoken to my editor about this great meeting I attended at the YMCA. I was just finishing some treatments, and they had a Live Strong program at the YMCA that helped people regain their strength physically and emotionally and spiritually. And I said to my editor, wow, I met these great people at this meeting I went to start this program at the YMCA that, you know, encourages exercise and strength. She says, why don't you write about it? And then all of a sudden, each week became something different. And I was very, I guess, inspired and energized is a word I guess I could use for this. But that's where it all began, just meeting people that shared different experiences with a horrific disease and be different topics. I mean, one week it would be working out in the pool with the over 50 age. And all of a sudden, you know, I met these wonderful women that were there with arthritis problems and other health issues. And it just became a growing, evolving column.
Is there something that writing about it does that just talking about it doesn't do?
You know, many times when you don't know where you're going, in health specifically, it really helped put into perspective that, you know, it's going to be a journey. It's going to be a long one. It's going to be a long haul with your pain, with your strength, with keeping the motivation. So if anything, it taught me that I wasn't alone. It taught me that we all share different experiences. And it taught me a better appreciation of life. One of the things that in previous years when I had different professions and always on the go, a former journalist, former PR in an office, always on the run, meeting deadlines, working more than 40 hours and not enjoying life to its fullest, missing my kids' events because I had to finish this deadline. Cancer, I guess, put it into perspective, writing the feelings, the emotions, the things that I saw, you know, my friends that passed away during the journey, and the voice in itself. I always, you know, think we take for granted these things. And I wrote about this. There was one called the census where my voice was taken away from me for 6 months. I had a tumor as well to grow on my vocal cord. So my right vocal cord nerve was removed. So when you're talking to somebody that, you know, interviews people, talks to people for the, you know, profession that I'm in, it was an eye opener. and it taught me to write, and I can't talk. I whisper, and that's not me. I'm not a whisperer. You know, I'm a loud, vocal, person that cheers on people, that motivates people, that teaches people, that, I mean, it was a real eye-opener for me.
So was writing then for you personally a form of therapy?
Yes, it was. And I keep thanking my editor because they still allow me to do it from different things, you know, viewpoints and the things that I come across every day. So writing is a way for me, and I'm hoping to finish my book soon, but, you know, you get sidetracked. It's a therapy. It's getting to know myself as putting the things in words. And sometimes on Facebook, the same, you know, you put your emotions into things when I see somebody accomplish something that nobody else can. It is a therapy.
But, you know, you have to come up with a regular column. How do you find different aspects of the disease and your reaction to it and others? Don't you run out of ideas?
Well, it's more than cancer now. This week's actually today, or, you know, the one that ran this week, we talk about the importance of sunscreen and cancer, and being the fact that on a hazy day like this, you could still get a sunburn. And from experience, got sunburned when I was helping my friend clean her pool. And the next day I'm like, God, sunscreen does, you know, I forgot, even with my tone, my skin tone, you could still get burnt. So it's like doing the things in daily life that, you know, you may not think, people may not know about. There's so many things that people may be not aware of that, or take for granted, not knowing that just the sunscreen that could keep you safe from skin cancer 10 years down the line. I recently did one on the addiction to medication. Pain medication. We see that these celebrities that, you know, don't, that abuse the prescription medications. And I could tell you, when you have cancer, you're on a lot of prescribed medications for pain, and it's horrible. I can't imagine people wanting to take these drugs for leisure because they do horrible things to you. So I did a story on that. So the personal experience brings a lot to it. And yet the experiences of others that say, hey, Martha, you should write about this. There was a woman who contacted me that had heard about my journey, and she's originally from the Quad Cities. And she had invented with her sister a lifting vest when their mother got sick. What an amazing story. It's patented, and now they're selling it for people in nursing homes, for people that do home care. Things that, you know, when you touch someone else's life through your words, that they can contact you or email you, what do you think about this idea? Or the mental health of children was another one. Hey, we you know that you're a mom, this might be of interest. So it's really a neat perspective on seeing how your audience takes your readings and then brings you ideas at the same time.
It sounds like you get a lot of feedback from your readers.
I do. And it's a really neat thing to know that people are actually reading the column, but also taking it as a helpful, you know, piece that can help them for many years to come on their different experiences as a parent, as a cancer survivor, as somebody who has arthritis, a gentleman who had prostate cancer, MS, and is still trying to get through the Live Strong program with motivation. I think it's a motivational piece to inspire you with the day-to-day things that life brings.
Mm-hmm. Well, then right in the, as almost as soon as you had your diagnosis, your husband got hit with a huge...
That was it. That,
you know, and I can recall reading that column, and I said, I couldn't take it.
it was. And those are the things when you bring, you know, and I have to thank the newspaper for letting me, you know, most people would say, I can't, you just put it out there. And it is. It's life. I was diagnosed with cancer in 2013 and re-diagnosed in 2015. So I had a surgery in December of 2015. They closed me back up because they couldn't get the tumor. And then I had 6 weeks later, had another surgery. Then in January of 2016, I had that, went through treatment again. And then in the fall, my husband fell. You know, when you have this rock that has carried you for so long, and then you see that fall, and I'm still in recovery mode and still trying to, you know, get back to work full time. I had a choice to continue to survive as not only the breadwinner now of the house, still going through treatment, having two growing boys. And it puts into perspective that when you're hit hard with the things that are thrown at you, you don't have a choice. You have to stay strong and you have to stay motivated. And quite honestly, you know, most people would say it's just a blur. I recall almost every day to the minute, like as we went through surgery after surgery with me and then having to go through open heart and mitral valve repair and then the infection that came along after that and then still having to deal to take out a brainstem tumor. How, I mean, it sounds like a soap opera, but it was a real true experience that when I put it on paper and I look back, you know, and I read and I'm thinking, my God, how did we survive? And, you know, you got to stay strong. And I think putting it out there and testing the day-to-day turbulence, you know, to say, if I can get through it, anybody can. And, you know, I don't believe in feeling sorry for yourself anymore. Or, you know, you learn to accept that the complaining of daily life is nothing to what can get thrown at you. You have to maintain the composure of being strong.
You know, when your life falls apart, you can thrash about in the ruins or you can cast about for a way to rebuild. And it is important, you know, that the life force in you is strong enough that you think, no, I'm not going to stop. I will rebuild. I will keep going. But that sometimes is very difficult to do.
It is.
It can be almost overwhelming. And it is good that you have the fortitude to not only go through this, but to write about it. And that helps you see it in an objective way, too. But Martha, is this all you write about?
Well, hopefully not. As a former journalist, every now and then I've enjoyed writing special pieces. I also write four times a year, quarterly, a Latino guide for the Dispatch Argus, where I pick a unique, with the Latino flair in mind, businesses or, you know, something where, you know, an advocacy program that helps the Latino community. And then I write that article in English and then I translate it into Spanish. So it's in both languages and it's a Latino guide for the bilingual community. And very blessed to have this because a lot of people that may not know that there are resources out there, they can get it in two languages. So
I saw Roel's ears twitch when you mentioned the word book.
Yes, one of my questions is, there's got to be a book coming from all this.
And I debate because there's two different ones. One is on the meeting of the different people that have, and I don't know if they should be combined, but I have like in this computer, I have like two folders of just writings. And one has the folks that I've encountered with just life in general, since my first day of college to where am I at today? Do we really think, you know, being a successful person, money? No, it's not about the money. It's about, you know, loving life and finding that joy in your life. And then the cancer component. And then I go, well, what are these titles? Can they be meshed together? I don't know. Maybe I have two good books. But I write, when you say therapeutic earlier, and, you know, we never see ourselves as just the right person. Like I always struggled with weight and I'm still struggling with weight, especially with all the medication I've been on. And, you know, putting my thoughts about my struggles with weight and putting my ambitions into where do I want to be in life? You know, you never know. I'm writing this, you know, writing as I'm writing the journey of life in a car and I'm just going and taking these experiences and writing them down. And maybe someday it'll be a nice bestseller. But with all the folks that not only have supported me personally, but supported the writing in the newspaper, the folks that know my students that I've had in classes that you think your life is bad. And then you hear somebody's experience of what they've gone through. I always say somebody else has it worse than you. Those are the folks that I write about.
It's one of old sayings is if you had your choice of all the crosses that people bear, and you had to pick one, you'd go back to your own.
Yes.
Right. Describe a little about your writing process. Do you do a lot of revision? Do you take notes, or do you just sit down and, you know, let something come?
You know what? Here's what I've learned about writing. And it's very interesting because my son is 19 and now a freshman in college, going to be a sophomore next year. And he's not a writer. He's the math. He's the science person. And that's not me. The writing process for me is I just start writing. And, you know, I start writing from the heart. And I think that's why the column in the newspaper fits, because I write from the heart or from the passion of this affects somebody or when it's such a tearjerker. Let me tell you, I went to a conference for work, and this gentleman who works for a hospital in Des Moines takes people that are, you know, in stage four cancer to do the most, I mean, amazing things, climbing, you know, Mount Everest. He takes this group of people, trains them while they're going through chemotherapy. And I just, you know, when I heard this motivational speaker, I just started taking notes. And then I recall their experience and it just flows. It's just like I'm telling their story through my writing. And so revisions, I go back just to make sure I don't miss commas, I don't miss a word. Because sometimes, you know, when you write, you think faster than you're actually putting it on paper. And that's where I catch myself. And then I have wonderful editors, my two editors at the newspaper. You know, they say, hey, I tweaked this a little. Because sometimes when you write as a writer, a little wordier because you want it all in there. And they know how to tighten it up. But I've been very blessed to have great people work with me to have the audience grasp what we're trying to say in a newspaper column.
So how long does a typical column take to write then?
Well, it's getting better. It's getting better. I used to spend a lot of hours and then my husband would say, you know, you're only a correspondent. Don't spend so much time because it's not worth the time.
Right.
But I become so passionate about it. It's, you know, less than an hour now. You know, I'm trying to keep it less than an hour. Sometimes it's like, oh, I know what I'm going to do, you know, and then I read it. And then my husband, who's also a writer, says to me, you are thinking too much. Just write it. And he's a sports writer, so it's very different. And I said, you know, I probably have more readers because I'm more of a life person. You are like, oh, they won the game. That's good kind of thing. You know, you can only write so much about that. But he says, no, the followers, you know, that follow us are people that want to know, you know, I get every now and then I get a note in the email that says, tell me a little bit about what's going on with your life. We haven't heard. Well, we don't want to just focus on what's going on with me. I want to talk about the things that affect us as a person, as a life survivor, because, you know, I go into the grocery store, that stirs up a column, from the problems of, you know, our kids today, what are our teens thinking? Why are they getting into trouble? All of those things. You know, it strikes up a little nerve in me that says, we need people to know about this.
I hate you. You write in under an hour.
Well, what I like about your writing style, and apparently it isn't deliberate, but is that you sort of, your words get out of the way and the thing you're talking about is there, right? It's the Puritan divine William Perkins talking about the Puritan plain style says, it is an art also to conceal art. And I think you do that beautifully, right? It's not like you're, when I read one of your columns, it's not like I'm reading the words. I'm seeing what's there, right? And that to me, you know, there are writers who write in such a flashy way that you say, boy, can that guy ever write? What did he say? Well, I forgot, right?
Well, you know, that's the problem too. When I look at what other people write, I think I got to quit. I shouldn't be in the paper with these people. But, you know, you keep slogging away to try to develop. Actually, you try to get rid of everything but what's in your mind to try to express as clearly what you're thinking and feeling. And, Martha, you've got the gift on that.
Well, thank you.
That's why I hate you.
Do you do workshops getting other people to write who are facing some sort of crisis?
You know, I have not thought about doing that. I have thought, you know, I always think about the teaching going into a classroom. And every now and then, you're not the first one that has asked me. And it's just a matter of, you know, how do you incorporate, I can teach theory, the theory of communications, the theory of writing, and, you know, having your intro, your body and your conclusion and wrapping it all up. But I honestly can tell you, it has crossed my mind. I haven't been there yet. There's so many things I still want to do and I just turned 50. And it seems like, I don't know if it's a reborn kind of thing. I always tell my husband, I have not been as happy as I have, and you know, until all this happened. You can't say catastrophe has caused me to look at this differently. Writing has evolved my life into, it's more than an art. It's more than just words. It's, you know, having the passion to tell your story and make a difference at the same time. Because when I hear about the woman who, you know, I sat in a hospice, you know, with a friend who went through Live Strong with me, and she passed away. And I'm just thinking, I saw this woman leave this earth, and you think, you know, and I just wrote and wrote, and then I even wrote a poem, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, it's like these life itself brings you so many things to think about. What's the best way to do it? Now I know I can't be a songwriter, because even though I'm a musician, I don't know if I could put the words in with music, but I can express with a passion what I'm feeling.
One final question I want to ask you. You are a cancer survivor. Does the knowledge of the possible recurrence of that sit like a ghost on your shoulder?
Every day. Every day. And I have to go to Mayo Clinic every 6 months, and it's coming up in June. And, you know, my son always says, Mom, do you think it's going to be okay? And I said, yes, it's going to be okay, because we've gotten through it twice. And it comes from within. You make it what it is. You have two choices. You curl up and say, I'm going to die, or you grasp it and live with it and love it. Love the situation to make it your own journey.
I should mention now that we're recording this just before June starts.
Yeah.
So by the time this airs on about the 30th of June, you will have some answers.
Yes, I will. The 19th and the 20th, I'm up there getting poked and prodded and the whole bit.
So that will all be over, and you will have an answer, and we will probably find out about it in your column.
Yep.
Martha, it has been a pleasure to talk to you. I admire your ability and your courage. And I think Roel and I would just encourage you to keep writing. Keep writing.
Apparently we won't be able to stop her.
Thank you.
We'll stop her with some music here. That conversation was almost inspirational.
It was. I mean, you read her columns, and, you know, back when she first began and everything was uncertain, and then her husband had problem after problem, you know, I thought, how can somebody even survive these kinds of blows? But she not only survived, she thrived. And
yeah, it's amazing.
Has been good for readers, too, I think.
I don't know if you could follow Shakespeare in Sweet or the Uses of Adversity, but adversity sometimes does bring out the best.
Well, either that or it destroys you, right?
Yeah, that's true. Well, you're still here, so.
I have a memoir to recommend. I didn't used to like to read memoirs. I mean, they seem to me kind of dull and boring. I'd prefer to read a novel or even a good piece of nonfiction, but I've more and more, as we've done this program and covered various authors, I've taken a look at memoirs by some of them. And the latest that I just came across is Larry McMurtry's Literary Life. He has a 3-volume memoir, of which this Literary Life is book number 2. He's the author of Lonesome Dove and The Last Picture Show and 28 other novels.
Yeah, he is a prolific writer.
This is a book about how he got started as a writer, sitting as a freshman in college and a teacher saying, well, you ought to write this into a story, and writing it into a story. And he makes writing sound so easy and getting published sound so easy. Well, my professor knew somebody who knew somebody who knew an agent, and the agent got it placed, and Hollywood bought the rights to it. And he admits that he has an uncanny ability to write books that Hollywood wants to turn into movies.
Yeah, that
and
is a real
both gift. Lonesome Dove and The Last Picture Show, both of which have been super movies.
Oh, yeah, Lonesome Dove. I remember the TV series, and it was a stunning thing, truly.
But the sidelight in this is that from an early age, McMurtry has been hooked on books. So much so that as a part of his literary life, he has opened bookstores, starting with a colleague in Washington, D.C., And then eventually in Archer, Texas, he comes from a little town of about 350 people. Four of the main buildings in town are the Larry McMurtry Bookstore with thousands of books, which he claims nobody in town, since they don't read, ever attends. But people come from all over the country to visit Larry McMurtry's bookstore, four-room bookstore in Archer, Texas. His own library is 30,000 volumes.
Oh, dear. Well, then I don't feel so bad.
at any rate, it's just a great fun read. And also, it usually is true if you look at memoirs of people who are successful writers that very few of them are lone people out in the prairie. They know other people.
Yeah.
How McMurtry got to know people as diverse as Ken Kesey, Susan Sontag, Wallace Stegner, Norman Mailer, and almost any other writer you can name. They're always visiting each other, it's no wonder that you find a way to get published.
You know, there's a community in every arts organization. Some painters maybe are loners, and there are loners in every field, but I found, for example, in music, I've talked to an awful lot of musicians through the years, and they all kind of know each other.
Yeah.
It's a rather close community.
So it's no wonder that sitting out here in Davenport, Iowa, you know, having a novel on your hands, but not networking with any other writers, how that's hard to get that published.
Yeah, that's true. Networking, one of my daughters has helped people get employment, and she says the key is networking. If you know someone who is in a company you're interested in, that's the way to open the door.
I just, on television yesterday, somebody was saying statistically 80% of getting your first job is who you know.
That's right. That is. And to do it cold, a cold introduction is hard. I've been through those,
yeah.
But I've been lucky. And you can't always be lucky. You do have to climb through a ring of people you know.
Well, I wouldn't be at Augie if my thesis advisor wasn't the boyfriend of the chair of the English department at Augie. You know, I mean,
it's funny how those things work, isn't it?
Unbelievable.
So what's the name of McMurtry's book?
Literary Life.
Literary Life. In just a few seconds here, I'd like to mention that one of the reasons I don't read as many books now is because I read so many magazines. And I must say that I've been impressed with some of the articles I've come across in The Atlantic. Everyone's worried about the contemporary situation in Washington. There's an interesting article about the presidency itself has maybe become unmanageable. And then there's a wonderful thing by Michael Gerson on the what's happened to the evangelicals. Why have they turned the way they have in politics? These are very thoughtful works, and they're in the magazine, last two recent issues, and they're well worth reading. So sometimes we kind of don't pay that much attention to magazines, but many great books begin as magazine articles, and I've seen some of mine turn into great books.
Right. Yes.
Okay, that'll do it for now. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. Thank you for attending to us today. We'll be back next week with another section on Scribble.